Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Formula Scout podcast. I'm the host, Alejandro Alonso Lopez, and of course, I'm not alone. Now a professional race car driver, 2020 Formula 2 vice champion Callum Ilott joins this week's episode to discuss the key moments of his junior career, how close he came to becoming Formula 1 driver, his current life in the NTT IndyCar series with Juncos Hollinger Racing, and also mental health. I hope you will enjoy the show. Callum, second or actually your third year as a professional race car driver. How does that feel for you?
It's good to have some solidity in my life. It's probably the first year where I've known what I was doing the year after. And that definitely makes it a bit easier to relax and focus on the things you need to for the season and the season to come. But yeah, I'm enjoying life. I can't complain. It's comfortable. I got to spend a bit of time at home in the off season, so currently in the UK. And then, yeah, in a couple of weeks, I head back and start work again in America.
You say your current situation gives you confidence. And is there actually point where you say, all right, I'm professional race car driver now, or is it kind of a slow transition as you move up the ranks, you're racing bigger categories and the thing is more and more professional and you feel more of a professional race driver even if you are still with sponsors and trying to need to put some money to race?
Yeah, it's it depends what you're defining it as. I mean, when you're in F3 and F2, it's obviously very professional, but it's a different type of professional. The definition of professional is getting paid and doing a job. And obviously F3, F2, you're doing a certain type of job, but it's completely different because you're trying to find money and bring it towards the team to get your drive. But I have to say from a personal side, like it's obviously a lot more relaxing in a certain way now because you haven't got that, should we say, financial stress of the year-to-year stuff that you normally do in F3 and F2. But no, there is a transition phase, I think, when like 2021 for me, when I was doing the GT stuff and doing the reserve roles. I would say in terms of what you're doing, it's relatively similar. As I said, F2 and F3 is very, very professional. But when you're changing over and your focus shifts and your personal life changes a bit, so you can kind of, I have to say I relaxed a lot when I put myself in those roles.
It's definitely different world, but last year you ran as just one car operation. How much of a difference is there running just one car compared to, for example, in Formula 2, Formula 3, where you drive mainly for yourself and your sponsors? Is there still a big difference, or is it like, all right, I'm on my own like I was in the past and I'm trying to get the best out of it?
Look, different people are going to react differently in that situation. I know a lot of drivers that have to look at another driver's data and then use that to improve. And they struggle to adapt on their own and know what's quickest for them without looking at something. I'm kind of the opposite to that like I can work on myself and get myself to the quickest point. Most of the time, obviously there's a couple of times where, you know, especially on new tracks that you'll be like, ah, that was a lot better. And unless I saw this video or saw that data, I wouldn't have known that, or I would have known it a lot later. Which does happen. I'm not saying that I'm perfect and, get it right all the time. So I would say like 80-90% of the time I'm able to improve to pretty much maximum what there is, but there's obviously a little bit that you need to improve on. And then comparing it to the F2, F3 side, I mean, F3, when I first joined F3, I had five teammates with Carlin. So there was all range of data, all range of driving styles, different car setups, and you could kind of follow that and get an idea. But as I learned through the ranks, what my style was, what the best way I could improve myself. You get to Formula 3, which is three cars. You get to Formula 2, which is two cars. And that, I have to say, it's very important, but at the same time, you're in such a rush for an F2 weekend because you've got the practice, and it's, I believe, 40 minutes or an hour. And you really only have time to do what you're doing and not really digest any of the data. And then after the practice, you get the data, obviously, but you get such a step up with the tire compounds that you have to know in your head what you're going to do with that compound. So the data from the previous year can help, but again, you know, it's the wind can be different and all this sort of stuff. So I would say that to move a team forward, and it was very helpful in Virtuosi with Joe because he was very quick, and was able to do different styles to me, and I look at it and go, oh, maybe that one's a bit better for this corner, maybe not. I don't want to take the risk to do it, or I can take the risk. But leading on to the single car stuff, being on new tracks and not having a teammate is a pain in the ass. You just have to guess, and I did a good job of guessing half the time, especially later on in the year. But it doesn't help me. It doesn't help the team because, you know, you need data to compare with. Luckily, I think my feedback is quite good, so we're able to progress. But if my feedback wasn't very good, you have nothing to understand whether I'm right or wrong until we go into the next session, and you don't have many sessions. So I think we did well with the way we were situated, but it's definitely one of the hardest things. And imagine, say, you have to test some dampers or a different setup, and you have two, three, four cars. That's two, three, four times the amount of testing you can do in a session. And we've just got one. So normally I can test one thing, and if it's good or not, well, you just have to hope and then bring it to the next one. Whereas with a team of four cars, you could have two cars and two cars doing the same thing, and both drivers can back to back the feelings of the other drivers, if you know what I mean. So you can test two different things with four cars and get a solid answer with both. You could even test four things if you want, but then you don't know if it's right or wrong, and it could be different for each driver.
As you mentioned that you'll have a teammate this year, I was thinking Pino will partner you at Juncos Hollinger Racing. How happy are you to have a teammate?
It's obviously makes my life slightly easier. I have to say that it's not an easy position to come into. IndyCar is one of the toughest. Augustine's got a good background, especially in the touring car side, and he's definitely fast and competitive. It's just without the single seater experience, it's very hard to be in the right be as
Perhaps
quick
to,
yeah adapt as
yeah.
quick as possible, pretty much. That's the way, and that's not easy at all. I know he's quick, and also with the esports stuff, he's able to adapt a lot, but it's super tough. It's super tough. So I'm interested to see how he gets on. And obviously, the closer he is and the faster he is, the better it is for the team. But yeah, it's going to be super tough. I think the first test is going to be on a track that no one really knows, in California, and it's very flat, very easy. So it'll be great for him to get a feeling with the car. And without too much variables like the bumps we normally have, and then we'll go into St. Pete, and that's a completely different story. So we'll have to see. But no, it's definitely good, and he's got a lot of experience and a lot of different things. But the single seater side is definitely a tough one.
Let's focus on your junior career now a bit, moving on. You were thrown straight into FIA Formula 3, the European Championship back in the day, one of the main junior series, from karting to such a very competitive championship, which is something unthinkable today. How tough was to adapt and to make such a big jump? You obviously did the TRS and stuff, but there were just a few races before you got to make your debut.
I mean, with TRS as well, the first 3 weekends, I think there was a problem with the gearbox on the car, for I think a quarter of the a quarter of the cars across the grid, and mine was one of them. So every time you start a race, you do about 4 or 5 laps, and then it wouldn't shift to fifth and sixth. So it was a bit of a like. Of course, it was good to get some driving experience and stuff, but half the championship was spent in the pit lane trying to change the actuators to the gearbox. No. Anyway, back to the F3 stuff. I mean, the testing and stuff went really well. When I was doing the end of season testing of 2014 into 2015, I was quick and it was looking good. We went into the season, and obviously teams like Prema had stopped sandbagging, and they become, the top 4 out of 5 cars at the front, and a couple of others as well. And actually, to be fair, it wasn't a bad season. I think I finished 11th or 12th in the championship, which for the grid that we had was fairly good and fairly competitive for a first season in anything. Of course, it's tough. You make mistakes. You have to learn. I think what I found, I a lot of it was very positive, though. I learned quickly. I got on with things, and was against very competitive teammates, who taught me a lot. The only detriment to doing it the way I did, I felt, was the racing, because I was always racing in very high downforce, underpowered cars. It was very difficult to make moves and overtakes. So you had to be you, basically the guy in front of you had to make a mistake, or you had to do a really crazy move to get past. Whereas if I had a race F4, something with less downforce, there's a lot more movement, a lot more overtaking, because you can drive closer without the aero wash from another car behind. And I didn't really, it took me ages to adapt to the racing side of things. And I felt that I was always on the wrong end of, should we say, moves and mistakes. And I kind of ended up going backwards sometimes more than forwards, because I never really learned the right way to do things. But other than that, I learned to drive quickly. I had good teammates. I love that car, the F3. Well, now F3 20 is the new one. The F3 17 from Dallara is a great car. Very light, very agile. Yeah, it's a shame they didn't continue that one.
You mentioned especially that you missed somehow some learning and how to battle other cars or how to overtake. If you were able to go back in time, where would you do it the same way again, moving straight into FIA Formula 3 European Championship, or would you start in a lower level? Would you change something?
I would have done it the same way. I didn't really, in the situation I was in, I didn't really have much of a choice of what I was doing. What I would have done is what other guys did, was start testing years earlier. A couple of the guys who went to Formula One, they were testing 2 years in advance. Obviously, it's difficult to do it to the extent that they did it, but at least to get some experience earlier on and not think that it will be okay. Of course, I was 15, so I had no idea what it's not my planning in that sense. But I there's a couple of things that probably, if I'd done some more testing, I would have learned a bit quicker. And that affects you for the long run, because maybe I wouldn't have needed 3 seasons in F3. I could have done it with 2 seasons, and then you're in a different position altogether. But it was kind of after that season we learned what was needed, and the people, and all of that sort of stuff. And of course, again, it's never perfect, but and you see what other people are doing, to prepare themselves. But no, I you can never, you can always want to change stuff. I don't think I would have changed my overall path, though.
So that 2015, you also joined the Red Bull Junior team. Was there that takeoff, Max Verstappen's successor? Max had already just moved from Formula 3 to Formula 1, and you were coming in as well in not similar, but kind of making your debut in car racing, and then of course you would be with Red Bull, who had promoted Max after the season. Were you affected by that effect somehow?
I mean, personally, not that it affected me. But yes, in terms of the decisions and maybe the mindset that was externally behind me, yeah, because he had jumped in straight into F3, okay, with a lot of testing behind, and the expectation was to follow him. That was why I was brought in from karting. It was like, oh, here's another really good karting driver. He could be able to do the same. The difference was, I think, across 2 years, he had like 70 days of testing in Formula 3 and Formula Renault cars, and I had about 12. So, you know, you're at a little bit of a disadvantage as you jump straight in. Yeah, I think that was a good thing because there was an expectation, or like something to follow and to prove that someone else had done it. But you know, everyone's different. I feel like I came to kind of my prime and my best around 2020 and 2021, where you kind of become completely one and you learn from your mistakes and you kind of can be overall a better person and a better driver. And maybe 16, I was very, very fast, but very raw driver. You know, there's lots of rough edges which I needed to help. But you know, again, if you're not directed in completely the right ways and people don't understand you personally, because they think, oh, you're just a quick driver and you should be able to do it, but no one tells you or shows you know, it's difficult. But no, it was a good experience for sure. I mean, they taught me a lot in that time.
So that year you parted ways with Red Bull. Did that affect you somehow personally or with the kind of mindset you had for the future?
I knew I had a lot of time. So in the background, I'm obviously like, okay, I've still got a few more years of cars. Personally, obviously, you're 16, probably just turned 17. At the time, I had a very bad week on the week that I knew I got dropped. There was some other stuff that went on, so it was just basically a big kick in the balls all at one go. I don't know. I kind of just got on with it. I think 2016 was a tough year. I got quite ill personally, whilst racing, and really struggled with like chronic fatigue and stuff like that. Various things. So it could have affected me in more ways than I knew, but you know, it's you're so young as well, you don't really understand the whole concept of it. So at that time I was like, okay, that's a shame, that sucks, but you know, there's a bit more time, try and get myself back into a good position and see what happens.
Do you think that being so young, for example, also for drivers now who are stepping up even at younger ages than what you did, the fact that they are so young affects performance in order to not being able to understand properly all what's happening, needing so much people around, is that detrimental somehow?
Yeah, no, I mean, I did it very personally, like my route through the, like I didn't have loads of people around me to help and do all these things, which at sometimes can be a detriment. And then on another side, you know, I'm able to do so many things myself now, and make so many decisions myself that I think in the long run it's a lot more helpful for me. Obviously, there are some things where you could go, okay, if we did this or made this decision, maybe we would have been in a better place. But again, that's life, and you have to learn. And sometimes the mistakes are the greater lessons. But to the young guys, I mean, it's great to have direction. It's great to have people who know what they're doing and have been there. And I mean, if I was working with a young guy now, I'm 100% sure I could probably do a better job than what I did, just because it's my whole journey that I've known, and it's so close to the journey that I've just done. But you know, there's lots of other guys who've been around and done similar positions. But then again, like once you get to the top, you know, like the F1 stuff, it's another ball game. It's like very difficult to understand a lot of politics, lot of being put in the right position at the right time. And yeah, I that one's still, I still learn every week, and there's a bit of a mystery as to what's going on with that side. So yeah, for the younger guys, I think it can be quite clear what the route is and what's best to do. And obviously you're stopped from going straight into Formula Three. But when you're young and you're in like the F4 and the regional stuff, it's good to probably take your time and learn as much as possible. You know, doing 2 years of F4 or spending one extra year in F4 regional can help quite a lot in the long run, because not as many people are looking at that stuff. Whereas the Formula Three, Formula Two, you need to be like in the right position at the right time with the teams and stuff like that.
As you say, with your background now and your experience, you perhaps do things differently, helping others. Would you one day, would you like to become driver coach or driver manager?
I mean, I do the management side. The coaching stuff doesn't, I don't mind doing the odd day or two. I still do that sometimes. But the managing side, yeah, I would do. Obviously, I've still got a bit of a journey to do on my driving side. So if it didn't take up too much of my time, I could do it. Again, it's a tough one because, you know, like I can definitely point people in the right direction and stuff, but finding the money and stuff like that's not an easy thing to do. You need a massive commercial mindset, and I'm still too young to be able to do that. But on the driving side, and yeah, knowing the best routes and picking the best teams, and obviously I know all the teams quite well now, for sure. I'd probably like to at some point in maybe 10 years get into the team manager side. Just because I think there's quite a few ways that things could be better, and work better and stuff. But yeah, that's a bit in the distance.
Moving on to the end of 2017, I believe that's when you joined the Ferrari Driver Academy. How different were the working methods between the Ferrari Driver Academy and the Red Bull Junior team?
It was quite. Red Bull was very singular. So you have this person, you'll do this and you'll do that. Good luck, kind of thing. It's obviously not that simple, but that was kind of the feeling. And you're like, okay, you know, and you get feedback every now and then. Ferrari was, FDA was very like, okay, you'll join these other kids, you're going to be doing this. This is your training schedule. Like, we'll do this together, a bit more family orientated. You know, with the Red Bull stuff, I rarely went to the factory, whereas with Ferrari, I was living at the factory. So you get to see all of this stuff. And it was also a bit of a learning exercise because the FDA was changing with people and the insides of it. So it was a bit more of a journey of like, what do they give you as a driver? So that was changing year after year as like what you were doing and all of this sort of stuff. And with Red Bull, it was very much, okay, you're driving Carl in Formula Three. With Ferrari, I mean, I made a lot of the decisions myself with teams and stuff like that. That obviously, you know, you have to get their approval, but it wasn't like they were doing it for me. It was like, here's the opportunities I have. What do you think? And we think this. And then I go, okay, but I think this, and this. And then, yeah.
Would you say there is one that works better than the other, or it depends on the driver?
Depends on the driver, depends on the age of the driver, depends on the environment. Yeah, it's not ever singular like that. I would say some years work better for me than others. Some things work better than me for others, but to be honest, like from my position now, I just look at it and go, okay, I like that, I like that, I didn't like that, I learned from this, I learned from that. And it was all a learning exercise more than it's like part of your journey in that sense. Yeah, it's a difficult one for any driver in these things, because you know you want them to be the right thing and push as much for you. But Yeah, it's also cool when you turn up and you go in these factories for the first day and you see all this stuff. It's very impressive. So it's like it's also part of the dream as well.
How big was the competition within the Ferrari Driver Academy between you? I mean, was there kind of, I need to do better than the others in order to get a bigger role within the main team? Or was more, as you said, family, you were obviously competing against each other, but also working together. Was there that sense of competition, perhaps with some drivers more than with other drivers?
Not so much like F3 2017, 2018. I think I was against with Giuliano in GP3, and you've still got F2 after that. I think that was fine. I went into F2, and there was Giuliano and Mick, and I was with Cheruse. You knew from the beginning that that was kind of going to be a learning year, and there wasn't really, and the situation with F1, it's not. You're not going to jump in the next year. It doesn't work like that. When we came to 2020 and you've got five drivers from FDA on a 20 car grid on 22 cars, you almost take up a quarter of the grid. That was definitely tough. Kind of from the beginning, it was one of those things where, well, look, guys, if you finish in the top three of the championship, we'll find and we'll do something for you. Obviously 2020 was strong and there was a lot of competition. No one really ever spoke about it, like between the drivers. You knew what was kind of going on. But at the at, and obviously I took that very seriously, and then at some stage it was kind of like, well, it didn't really matter the competition side. At some point it was done and chosen, and that's that. So and I'd also done a decent job, so I kind of knew what would happen for the next year at a certain point, and you knew that you were guaranteed a top three finish anyway, if you just kept normal.
Yeah, well, 2019 was you and Mick both stepped up to Formula 2, and you mentioned that it was kind of a learning year. Were you surprised with your speed in the Cheruse compared to not only to his in the Prema, but to the rest of the grid, especially towards the end of the season, but also at the beginning, because you had great days like qualifying at Monaco and some other great performances.
Yeah, look, I've always been quick. I think people forget, like 2016, I was up until just beyond halfway in the championship in F3. I was P2 to Stroll in this F3 championship in my second year in cars, and then we arrived in Nuremberg, Nürburgring, and I had an engine blow up, and then you've got suddenly three times 10 place grid penalties. And then from there, the championship just went shit. I don't know why, but we dropped back. I got disqualified for being 0.1 of a kilo under with the fuel or something at another race. So I went from like third in the championship in my second year to sixth, all within the last weekend, and because of this stuff. That was a strong year, and I was quick. And then the year after with Norris, I had the most poles. I had like 10 or 11 poles in F3, of course, with Prema. And I have to say, we definitely didn't have a good direction with the car that year. They'd added 15, 18 kilos of weight and a different aero kit, and we just got it wrong. The car was quick, but it was a pain in the ass to drive, and I made a couple of mistakes, but I was still quick. GP3, I don't know what went on. I could never get the car to the way I wanted it. Just it was also very limited on what I was allowed to do with the car, so didn't really get that in the right direction, but finished third in the championship, so couldn't really complain too much, but obviously behind the teammates I had. And then with Cheruse, I was very quick, not in the races though, with that older wheel. So the, what was it, 13 inch, I think, before they went to the 18 inch wheel. It was very rear limited, like in terms of the degradation that you had. And no matter what I did driving style wise, I couldn't help it, and I would just drop back. So you know that I had to drive just in a wrong way to even make it through the races. So we were just slow. Like I'd be pushing 100% and still be slower than someone saving tires in the race. Like this was before you had the degradation, and I didn't really understand it. So of course, like I tried so many things during the year to make it better, make it worse, and it didn't really work. And we got to the end of the year, and I'd kind of found a good way to do it, but it was still sometimes I'd have just a massive degradation at the end of the stint, and it would come out of nowhere. But I know that was fixed for them when the 18-inch came, because it just shifted the balance of the car so much in the races, and the fronts became the limiting factor for once, which became a problem for us in Virtuosi because we didn't predict that. But yeah, I think I was the third fastest qualifier overall in 2019, and the speed was there from the beginning, which was kind of strong. Other than Bahrain, I put it in the wall.
You said that you've got the feeling that people often forget how fast you are. Why do you think that's the case? Perhaps not being able to clinch that title throughout your junior career?
Possibly people look at the overall results more than the finer details because maybe they don't have access to the details, or maybe, at the end of the day, they don't really care how fast you are unless you put it all together. It's just a beginning. But again, I mean, if we go into that, there's like so much more to it anyway, other than the results that you get. You have to be in the right team at the right time. All the little things like, the starts that people were blaming me for was a clutch issue half the time. So it's like, you don't, everyone's saying, oh, you keep stalling. Well, you can't control it half the time. And I don't know. Sometimes I wish, people had paid attention to it more. Of course, at the time they do, but like it wasn't. Throughout my career, it wasn't a new thing. I mean, in karting, that was like what I was known for. If I would be sent out with 4 minutes to go on the clock in qualifying, go out, push box, and just that was it. And I would do one lap, and I'd be pole by 2/10 in karting. And like, obviously, no one sees you in karting, and there's no qualifying live streamed on the karting stuff, but. Yeah, it's a shame. I think my speed definitely is stronger than some others, but of course, I had to improve on the racing in some ways. Again, little mistakes here and there. That's life.
Back on to the Ferrari Driver Academy stuff. How much of an impact had having Mick around for the rest of you? Because you mentioned earlier that at some point you start realizing that there is, of course, politics around, it's not only the performance. How much of an impact had it, obviously for you, but also for Marcus, Robert, those of your generation that were fighting for a place in Formula One?
I knew it was going to be very difficult when he arrived in the FDA because, obviously he's got a lot of history within Ferrari as a family, as a name. There's obviously certain things that, should we say, drag the attention off of you, and onto him. But on a racing side, I wasn't too stressed. Obviously he was in with Prema, great team, one of the strongest in every category they race in. Yeah, he's a good driver. He's fast. He definitely pushes sometimes a bit too much. But he does know how to race and how to race hard. I think probably watching his father that helped quite a bit. No, but with the FDA stuff, yeah, it's definitely gonna, you knew it was gonna be tough when he joined. And if he was in a good position, you knew that there was obviously gonna be quite a push. But no, as a guy, he was a good guy and good fun to kind of work with.
You went head to head for the Formula 2 championship in 2020 with him. Would you say you were given a fair shot at it?
I would say so. I could have won that championship.
So you earlier mentioned that kind of Ferrari told you that year if you ended within the top three of the championship, they would give you a hand at stepping up to Formula 1. How close did you came to make it to Formula One?
Yeah, I mean, to clarify, it was that we would help find a seat. It's not that you definitely get one. You know, there's never any guarantees in these industries. So it was yeah, understood that, you know, it was never guaranteed, but obviously you've got a very good chance if you finish in the top three. I would look, it's very difficult because I was not told really anything from that side. Like I never really knew what was going on until it was solid. Of course there are other ways for me to find out information, and I did, and then the media would always clarify that information 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later. So you knew you were kind of getting stuff that was correct. And again, I felt like I got quite close. But of course, you never know really where these deals are at, where their minds are at. Yeah, I think in some ways it could have got a bit more help in some areas. But again, it can all change in a week. I remember that Nürburgring FP1. Before that, it was kind of looking like that's the directions of everything. And then I remember the Monday after that weekend, it just all changed. And then it went from you have a great chance to chow chow, basically. Very, very little. So yeah, it's the world works like that, and it's quite tough. And it was quite tough to hear. And again, I didn't hear that directly. I heard it through my own sources. But yeah, I mean, if it was all from the one side, I didn't know until three races to go that I wasn't going to Formula One. Two races.
Are you disappointed with how it was managed? Would you have liked to be told straight to you what was the situation in order for you to kind of be able to work on your own that?
I'm not. I look. It's tough. And that it's a big moving entity, Formula One, and lots of decisions are made off of lots of things. It's never just one thing. I mean, if it was on who was the quickest driver, I'd probably have a seat. If it was off of, you know, championship results, I'd probably have a seat, or at least a chance. No. I wish some things were communicated earlier, or at least, you know, the idea and the perception. And I much prefer being told the truth than some bullshit half the time, because, you know, it's just, you live your life off of hope. You know, I lived 2020, 2021 off of hope. And, you know, a lot of people don't give a shit about your hope. You know, it's just a dream for you. Okay, go along. And you know, I found that out on one stage, that no one really cared personally about my dream or whatever. I'm just another, what is it, chess piece, the pawn on the front. You know, tough. We'll just let you move two spaces and get on with it. And so that was why 2021, I took it into my own hands and was like, well, you know, I'm gonna go and find my own way. Because, you know, no one would ever find their way for me, kind of thing. So I went over to IndyCar, and that's the start of it. But no, I don't think it's managed poorly. It's just that's how it works. You know, that's why sometimes you need people in the right places, but you're dealing with something that's so political and so big. There's a lot more to it than that, a lot more to it than just being managed slightly better.
You leave 2020 and also 2021 of hope that indeed in 2021 you stayed one more year with Ferrari as test driver and Alfa Romeo reserve. What was exactly your role within both teams?
Test with Ferrari, in a certain way is like a holding place on a contract, because there was a reserve driver, and that was Giovinazzi, I believe, and test driver was more like the simulator side of things, and just like I wasn't really going to the track with Ferrari. I was just behind the scenes, and not doing a massive amount, which is why I started doing some of the GT stuff as well, because they had a space there and there was probably potential to run for the hypercar. That was fairly minimal, to be fair. But then the reserve stuff with Alpha, I wanted to do, so I pushed for that and got that with Fred, and that came with the FP1s and stuff, and that kept me busy going to the tracks, staying in touch with people, and filling my weekends up, basically. The FP1s were obviously great to do and a great experience, and then to work with all those guys and see the professionalism and learn from Giovinazzi and Raikkonen. Yeah, to see them hand in hand and like the way they speak, the way they work with the teams for a potential, if I got the seat in 22, to be able to replicate and do the best job possible.
Correct me if I'm wrong. At the end at that year, you ended up doing just two free practice one sessions, and if I'm not wrong, there were a schedule or at least the idea at the beginning of the year was to do more. What happened there?
No, I had more agreed, and then I found the IndyCar stuff, and I think I had to sacrifice one for an IndyCar test or race. I think it was maybe a race, Sochi. I had to sacrifice because I was probably going to do that one, and I chose to do the IndyCar stuff because I was like, that's probably what I'm going to end up doing. And then I had another two, but they kind of disappeared as soon as I confirmed I was doing IndyCar.
There was still some involvement with Alfa Romeo in 2022, in Miami, for example, we saw yourself as reserve. Was just to that, or there were kind of some other roles for you behind the scenes?
No, like, obviously, I still keep in touch with Fred. Obviously, now he's at Ferrari, actually. But they needed someone for Miami, and I was there. I was going anyway, and it made sense. And so it was just limited to that. I did offer for anything else, but they didn't need it. And I think they had Porsche for a couple of races later on in the season, which I might have done if I was around. But yeah, it's
Also, Robert Kubica was in the role as well.
exactly. Yeah, sorry. He was 50-50 my year anyway in 2021. So yeah, I wasn't needed, but I'd offered myself for that race.
Wrapping up a bit your junior career, what have been the best and the worst moments of those years for you and why?
2015, I would say it was a solid first year. I think it maybe the expectation was too high, but overall a great learning year, great teammates, and a good, a good start. 2016, very fast, lots of potential. We just had way too many problems and way too many setbacks on that side. It was ridiculous that year. Really, really, really bad some things, but finished sixth in the championship. Wished it could have been a bit better, and there was definitely potential to be better. 2017, that was kind of a bit of a little mix. I had very good speed, but didn't really execute earlier on in the season. And then later on, the speed dropped off, other people's speed increased a bit, and I couldn't really couldn't match it. And I dropped back a little bit, so I ended up finishing fourth. But again, that was the last year of that Formula 3 that I did, and was good. And you know, being with a team like Prema as well, that was great to learn and see how they work. Then we went to GP3 2018, finished third. That was my first top three in a championship, so that was nice to kind of tick off. And to be fair, at this point, every year it got better and better. I'd gone 12th, sixth, fourth, third. I think, you know, Antoine was definitely very strong that year. Just slightly, I remember we're going through always all the sectors, and he was like 2/100ths quicker here. I'd be 1/100th quicker, and it just put it a bit together towards the end. And, you know, he did a solid job that year. But the thing that sucked was not really being able to tailor it to what I like, and I was driving a car that really was not set up for me at all, really compromised, which was a shame. 2019 was a good learning year in F2 with Tarouz. I was lucky to be even in F2, because I turned up to the test not having a seat, and we couldn't make things work. And yeah, Tarouz managed to help with that and put me in Formula 2, so I'll always be grateful for that. And then yeah, we were definitely very quick. I don't think there's much wrong to say with that year. You know, we did a good job for what we had. Obviously, you know, the stuff that happened at Spa is probably one of the worst things that happened in a long time, but that's the downside of that year. But it was a good learning year, and F2 is a tough one. And then yeah, 2020, I wish I could have got the win. I don't know how much of a difference it would have made if I'd won it, but obviously, maybe a few more people would be behind me then. And yeah, I showed all the speed I had, all the good things I could do. My favorite races from that one was I did a pit lane start from Silverstone, and there was no safety car, and I managed to finish fifth or fourth from the pit lane, which was crazy with no safety car. I stalled in the pit box in Monza and was pretty much last, and came through to fifth or fourth again. Those two races were good to showcase that I'm fast, I can overtake, and that sort of stuff.
Were sorry to
Yeah,
interrupt
and that's
you. Were those two still hard to swallow after the, for example, having great speed being in the fight for the victory in of future races and then.
yeah, because that was 12. Wait, 10, 7, 8 points I'd gifted to Mick in Monza, because of a thing that shouldn't have happened. And no one else seemed to have the issue, but that's life. And I'd done a great race up until then. The Silverstone one was a shame, because it was on the home race, and I was so quick in Silverstone. So no, I think that would have been an easy win. You know that they were like Monza would have been a good win. Silverstone would have been an easy win, and you're just throwing away points that you could have easily had. So even though I did great races and pulled it back and was super fast, which is my own little personal reward for making up for the mistake that I made, it's painful when you know what you lost in that sense.
What has been the most defining moment for you?
Defining.
Yes, as a driver.
I'd say the 2020 championship changed the projection of my career and my life. By finishing second in F2, that kind of obviously put me in a position to have potential to do a lot of things. Yeah, I would say that made the biggest impact to my journey.
Does Macau still bite you somehow?
Oh yeah, that one
Especially
hurts. Yeah.
the 2017.
Yeah, no, that one definitely hurts. I that race would have been great to win. I mean, at the time that was a super important race, and one I should have won. But I mean, it moved on so much from that. But I remember that Macau was a race that put Dan Ticktum really on the radar at the time. So I wish I would have solidified that one, yeah.
Are you happy in the car now? Is that your medium long-term project?
So it's a yeah, I would say it's a medium term project, which could be very long term if you look at Scott Dixon, Will Power. You know, at the end of the day, I'm with Hunkos, and they brought me into IndyCar. They gave me the opportunity, and you know, we've got a big plan to try and, you know, improve as much as possible. And then at some stage, you know, you don't know. I would like to see what other opportunities there are. After IndyCar, there could be the hypercar stuff is very appealing. I do take an interest to that, but it was at the wrong time in my career to really step into it. I think there's more of an impact I can do in single seaters and all, and it was a good opportunity for me in IndyCar. But I think I'm going to target probably another 4 years in IndyCar, and see what position I'm in and where I'm at and where the championships are at, and then look at what, you know, what else they might be able to do. I might stay in IndyCar for the long term. I might have maybe won the championship and have an opportunity in Formula One, which I may or may not turn down out of spite. You know, who knows? It's like it's a world of opportunity. But right now I'm happy with where I'm at. I have a good life in America and quite a long off season. So it's nice.
With your current situation, if a Formula One team running towards the back of the field called you, what would be your answer? I mean, called you for a seat full time.
Yeah, it depends on what's like what I've got lined up, you know, in IndyCar or in hypercar. I think with currently one of the top two or top three teams in IndyCar, that's a great long-term career and opportunity. For a 1 year in Formula One, is it worth the trade? Probably not. But because it was something that I worked at for many years and still got turned down for, just to be able to do it and see what it's like, you know, a lot of people will be like, you'd be crazy to turn down the opportunity. But you know, it really depends how settled I am and how much, you know, I'm enjoying IndyCar. So I'm not going to write it off, but at the same time, it's like I've got to be in the position to be able to have that decision. And it would be a nice decision to have, that's for sure.
What's the advice you would give to other drivers that are perhaps in a situation like you were Formula 2 drivers with almost no opportunities to go to Formula 1? You made a decision to go across the ocean and make the switch to America. What's your advice for them?
You have 1 year, don't have 2 years. So 1 year of being reserve and out the seat is okay. If you've got something solid for the year after. If you haven't, I would suggest being in a seat racing is important, because you know the world changes quickly. Opportunities come and go, and the moment you're out of the window of that, you know, it's very tough to get back in. And people make it work, obviously, but it's a year of your life, 2 years of your life, where you know you're unsure and you can feel a bit punished by it. But yeah, I would just jump at the opportunities you can get and see what you can do. And also that, you know, you've got to look longer term than what the present is. And although what's in front of you might look amazing, there's lots of positives and negatives to everything. And you've got to balance that and decide what's best for you.
All the pressure you go through in racing, but obviously everyone goes through lots of pressure, but drivers, young drivers especially, with all the investment that sponsors, the family puts into their careers. Have you ever struggled with mental health?
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things that sometimes more people speak about it more. Lando obviously dove into it quite a lot. But with me, yeah, I would say so. I mean, an athlete is it's a weird life. You know, your mood is dependent on your results most of the time. And of course those results can change during the weekend to weekend, year to year. When we were doing Formula 3, there was three races on a weekend, and you could do a great first two races and mess up the third race, and you leave that weekend feeling like you've done a shit job in a certain way. But no, I mean, there's the up and down of emotions, which, you know, is in some ways is probably quite healthy, and in some ways really isn't healthy. And then, you know, having to deal with personal setbacks, you know, this is life-changing things. It's like exams. If you fail your exam or your university degree, you don't get the opportunities that you want to, and that affects you. And the same way that, you know, if your family put all their savings into your university degree and you fail your university degree, I think that's a lot of pressure and a lot of stress to deal with. And on a year-to-year basis, of course, it's not the same, but it's a similar feeling, and weekend to weekend it changes. So the answer is yes. I have struggled at times. I've had to see people to help with that. I mentioned earlier that in 2016 I had chronic fatigue for almost 9 months of the year. I was sleeping 14 hours a night, going to school and racing. And still, like every free period I would have at school, I'd be sleeping because I was so tired. And that was including the 14 hours a night, so whatever I could on top of it. And I look back and I go, "Fuck, right, that's not really, that's not ideal." But I got through it. I somehow recovered quite well, thanks to the help of some people. But you know, these are the hidden things. Like I didn't mention it at the time. I just got through it. To be honest, I didn't even know what was wrong with me at the time. I just knew I was really struggling, and that year I got really depressed because of it. Because when you're so tired, there's nothing you can you, mentally you're tired as well. So with the exams at school, with school, just every day was super tough on me. And of course, I'd you know, like parted ways with Red Bull the year before. The year was super tough driving wise, racing wise. So yeah, no, the answer is yes. And I think it's very common, but again, I wouldn't speak about it all the time because that stuff is viewed still to this day as a weakness. Now I view that as a strength coming on from it that I got through 2016 for me. But at the time, even later on, with the pressure and the stress you have, that your whole career and your whole family is behind you on this, and that you suffer at home because of everything behind, I would never speak about it because it was deemed as a, I always thought it was a deemed as a negative. So that's something I had to deal with myself, and I had to keep my world separate, if you know what I mean. Racing couldn't mix with what I was feeling or the people I had to deal with to help with that, you know. And most people can't help with it. It's not something that's as simple as seeing someone, you'll all be fixed. I mean, the amount I don't operate like that. You know, I have to be, what's something written down here? I have to be at peace of mind first before I can even, you know, start thinking things, and that's very tough when you're in the position of the stress that you have and all of this. And especially with the way that some of the championships were formed. I mean, you had 2 months between Sochi and Abu Dhabi, which was the final round of the championship, not on a normal year without the COVID stuff.
Are there any regrets in your career?
I would have loved more of an opportunity in Formula One, to really show what I could do. It's not to say it's over. I mean, look at De Vries. He managed to get that opportunity and make it work. And that's something that I believe I could do as well, and change it. There were certain decisions at certain times where you'd be much better off in that decision, that environment and that thing, but I don't think it would have made a massive difference. This is like the thing of asking, obviously I can be pissed off with things and stuff. I'm a bit disappointed, but unless I can really change it, and unless I really think I'm gonna have been able to change it, it's out of my hands, and I can't really regret something that's really out of my hands. There is obviously stuff that you can be disappointed in, but if I can't change it, it's not my fault. So I it's an accumulation of a lot of things. Obviously, there are little things like the cow and the stalling where I go, "You're a muppet," but again, that's something that's situational. I could have easily changed. Yes, it's a bit of a regret, but on the grand scheme of things, it really it's small. I'm 24 years old now. I'm older than I used to be, but there's still plenty of years to drive some more laps and win some more trophies.
It's certain that Callum will need some more space in his trophy cabinet very soon. Thank you all for listening, and until the next episode. Bye!